Hello.
And hello there.
It's season to taste. Episode 16, where we pick up the pace.
In the last one, we had to choose from season 3. So we settled on the story made of Serial Z.
Z. A production decision that was brave or maybe wrong was to fill every moment with a narrative song.
It's big-lunged Linda Barron, and she won't stop soon.
'Cause her record's on repeat at the Last Chance Saloon. So, Matthew, what did you think of this story?
I thought it was quite good as a comedy. The accents were wobbly, but the script was quite fun.
Oh, I meant to mention that this all will be sung.
Sung all the way through.
Yes, that's what we agreed. We'll sing for half an hour.
No.
You said. So, this is episode 16 of Season to Taste. That is your DVD extra. For this week,
actually, isn't a DVD, is it?
Always picking holes, aren't you? Always picking holes. This is episode 16 of Season to Taste podcast.
Season to Taste.
We're not done midnight yet.
So
the randomizer sent us off to season 3, and we chose the Gunfighters. So, actually, Matthew, what did you think of Doctor Who and the Gunslingers?
I thought it was quite good as a comedy. The accents.
No, that's what we wrote down as the song. That I just.
Oh. Damn, I was hoping you would script my contributions, given that I had a slight tendency to fall asleep during this one. Not, I hasten to add, because of any comment on the quality of the story, which I thought was pretty great. More that I'd been working all night and, unfortunately, Morpheus embraced me during part 3.
To be fair, you did manage to stay awake for longer than William Hartnell does to his own stories a lot of the time.
That's true.
Well, I thought it was very good. On the very let scale, and what was particularly a pleasant surprise. I mean, I knew it was kind of known as a comedy, but it's genuinely a really funny story. It's a sparkling script with lots and lots of proper good jokes in it.
No, it is, and it's great to see Donald Cotton's names on the credits, because he is great at the comedy stories. I think it's such a shame that the Mythmakers has been destroyed and will never be seen again, because. I think that would probably be as funny for the first 3 episodes.
It's interesting that it tends to be the historicals, and like, even though we were saying the Space Museum is quite funny, it does tend to be the historical stories that get that treatment. And I wonder if it's partly that when you're taking a situation that's kind of already well known, you don't have to spend as much time on exposition. Not that the Gunfighters, the Echo Corral is particularly famous, detail-wise, but it's almost as if you can immediately recognise the concept of a Western. And you don't need a lot of setup.
I get the feeling that Westerns were much, much more popular in this country, and probably in the States as well, but definitely in this country in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because even when I was a kid in the 80s, there always used to be Westerns on ITV or BBC Two on a Sunday afternoon or a Saturday afternoon. Mm. It seemed to be quite a big thing in those days. It's only, I guess, since I've been a teenager and an adult that actually... Westerns are not a thing.
I never watched Bonanza, but I was always aware of it being on.
Yeah, I remember there were loads, when I was about 10, I think they did it on BBC One, they had loads of trailers and dumb Trump, was it Lonesome Dove? That was a big flagship show, I think, and I remember seeing loads of trailers for it. It's just not the kind of thing that I would ever watch.
No, anyway, the
reason I raised that was, I think probably in the 60s, the Gunfight the OK Corral was probably... more well-known than it is now. I think it'd probably be as well-known as, you know, stuff like the Highlanders in Culloden. And, it's certainly more well-known than the Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve and the French Huguenots.
I was going to say it does quite a good job of introducing you to the characters, although it does have a bit of a merry-go-round of characters. You know, every time someone gets killed off, they introduce, oh no, we've killed the Clanton, bring in Johnny Ringo, we've lost an Earp, get another one. It feels like there's a bit of a revolving door of characters. Yeah. And there are a lot of them with variable American accents. I think that's the least original comment we could make on the Gunfighters, isn't it? That some of those American accents, not that American.
Yeah.
I kind of picture Shane Rimmer grimacing. Is he Canadian, Shane Rimmer?
I think he is Canadian, yes.
I think he still recognised quite how dodgy some of them were. The other criticism I would have of the story is that it goes great guns, no pun intended, for the first 2 episodes, but it then does kind of start to run out of steam.
It starts to flag when it gets to the real historical bit, doesn't it? When it starts to get closer to the gunfight. it starts to lose some of the comedy sparkle, and it starts, it's as though Donald Cotton thinks, oh, actually it's meant to be an educational family show, I better make this actually factual.
The plot starts to take over. It also just feels like he's basically used up all of his gags.
Yeah.
And so just reverts to telling
a holiday for the doctor. I just think a lovely I wish he'd got away with his episode title for one of the Mythmakers episodes.
So
Is there a doctor in the horse?
Well, that's it. Even the titles. The first one's called A Holiday for the Doctor. The second one's called Don't Shoot the Pianist. And then the third and fourth ones are called Johnny Ringo and the OK Corral. Yeah, come on.
There's a definite split, isn't there, between the first two episodes and the last two.
It's there in that we've obviously gently alluded to the song. But it's there in the song as well. The song has verse after verse differently weaving you through the story. And then it gets to the third and fourth episode and just starts repeating them.
The first really annoying and repetitive song in Doctor Who, but sadly not the last.
Oh, I didn't get that straight away. Still, we haven't got there yet.
Spoilers!
However, back to something that's entertaining.
Dodo.
Yeah, I actually thought Dodo was pretty fun.
She was, actually. It is probably her best story, mainly because it actually looks like Jackie Lane's having a bit of fun for once. And although the characters hardly gets anything much to do, she gets kidnapped, doesn't she, by Doc Holliday, and she gets kind of locked upstairs and basically bossed around quite a lot. There's a couple of lovely bits. I love when Doc Holliday slaps her on the bum as she goes out the door. And then someone else does that
Hartnell,
too.
Hartnell, you said Hartnell.
Hartnell, yes, Hartnell slaps her on the bum going into the TARDIS. So I think they're taking what you need is a jolly good smacked bottom to extreme for that amusement.
Although it's not actually her line. It's my favourite Dodo moment is, and I think this is an example of the comedy in the story. It manages to be funny without undermining the story, and it does, like a kind of good sitcom, it manages to come naturally from the characters, and sometimes it's just the characters being witty. So when Dodo and Stephen are leafing through all the music to find a song, guess which song it is they find to sing. That they say, oh, the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, and Stephen says, I hope the piano knows it. But yeah, Dodo kind of, yeah, she doesn't contribute a huge amount, but she's a light character and contributes to the tone of the story.
She does.
And she stands up, she has a big scene standing up to Doc Holliday that works well with her.
Yeah, that's probably her finest hour. But I do love the other bit where she flounces off up to her room when Stephen has to stay downstairs with the Clanton brothers. And she goes, well, suit yourself. You've spent time with your new friends. Or she stamps off upstairs in a right half.
We mentioned Westerns briefly. I think it's probably actually faster moving than a lot of Westerns.
It probably is, yeah, because a lot of those are just men spitting into some sand and looking grumpy, aren't they? I suppose we've also touched on him, but Peter Purves is absolutely brilliant in this, isn't he? He has a real kind of comic touch and real great comic timing. The bit where he's made to sing the song again and again, and the gritted teeth glaring.
It's the cliffhanger of episode one. The cliffhanger is Peter Purves singing a song.
Oh no, he is very, very good.
Some of the scenes just reminded me that Charlie the barman has a very dirty comment when they come in, and he says, oh, you'd be a good singer. And they say, well, haven't you already got a singer? And he says, oh, she's always out at night. Oh, that's a cheeky little
suggestion. And he kind of gives a wink-wink, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very loaded line. It's not innocently covered.
I mean, Hartnell is on such good form, given this light comedy to play. There's one line in particular that touches on taking the mick out of the show, but manages not to at all, which is when they're all dressed up in their Wild West garb, and the Doctor just says, well, I think you should wear conspicuous clothes like I do. it's almost admitting quite one odd outfit is that the Doctor wears.
I mean, it is. It's a meta comment, I suppose call it, wouldn't you?
But he plays it completely straight, and you can imagine that actually the first Doctor genuinely thinking he's wearing an inconspicuous costume.
Clearly he does, but clearly Donald Cotton and everyone else is in on the joke.
Yes.
And I think it's one of those great things where everyone's in on the joke. Hartnell's in on the joke, but he plays it beautifully, innocently. So the way that he holds the gun that he's given by Doc Holliday, and he says, oh no, I never carry them, I don't approve of violence and things like that, is absolutely lovely.
He says, I'll meet you in the hotel lounge.
The hotel.
just the pronunciation of the word is hilarious. Or when he just randomly decides to say that Stephen and Dodo are a part of his acting troupe, and then to keep up the pretense when they're being led off by the police, says, "Come, my fellow thespians."
Yes, that's brilliant. Oh, I love that line. I also like, I think it's the first time that they do the tiresome Doctor Who joke, when he says, "I am Dr. Caligari. And Mr. Worp says...
It's Masterson, isn't it?
Oh, Masterson says...
Doctor Who?
Yes, quite so, quite so. I think, obviously, they do it in the second episode ever, where Ian says...
Doctor Who?
But that, I think that's the first time it's done as the joke, and not the last again.
There's,
but...
there's lovely business when he goes to the dentist, and he's like, suddenly decides he doesn't want to go to the dentist, and yes, he sees what kind of ramshackle hair it is.
You're my first patient. Tries to get away.
And then afterwards, when there's no one else in the room, just kind of stands on his own and goes, "It's a good thing I wasn't having my tonsils out."
I think, given that it's the first story that Hartnell did after he avoided being sacked, maybe he's deliberately trying to fire on all cylinders, but he definitely absolutely sparkles in this. He's so lively, and so it's just so perfectly judged. It's one of my favourite Hartnell performances.
There's a wonderful bit in the bar where he is... there's two really with him. One is the Clantons, each saying a word in turn as if showing that they're kind of a really close-knit family. Yeah. They say one line in a sentence each. And at the same time this is happening, Hartnell is leaning on the corpse of Charlie the barman and then kind of realises what he's leaning on and jumps up. Which is a horrible thing for the Doctor to do, but it's really funny in the context.
Doesn't he say at one point, "I do wish people would stop giving me guns"?
Yeah. I love that it's almost playing on, by that point, how many different people has the First Doctor got mistaken for? He gets mistaken for the lyre player in, is it lyre? In the Romans. Yeah. He's only been seriously, like, horrifyingly mistaken for the Abbot of Amboise three stories earlier. And now he's been mistaken for Doc Holliday. It hasn't quite twigged that maybe there's an issue here.
Yes.
But as well as being really funny, he has some great moments, you know, great bits of just face acting. There's a bit in the bar where there's a lot of gubbins going along behind him, and he just sits quietly at the bar, like, looking into the distance, thinking. Mm. And you get a real sense of him mulling over the situation. And then later on, when he's in the prison cell, and he's kind of sat there lonely and all his friends taken away, it's a really kind of sad moment of him just looking dejected. And he actually, this guy knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple of things. I think Hartnell is slightly dismissed and underestimated by a lot of people who came to the series later on, and maybe because of the five faces of Doctor Who and the five Doctors were more familiar with either Richard Herndl or, you know, very ill William Hartnell in the three Doctors. But actually, in his own time, he absolutely nailed that role. I mean, I think he was fundamental to the success of the show for the first 3 years. It's kind of underestimated how hard Patrick Troughton had to work to convince people that he was a worthy replacement. Because I think a lot of the audience research was quite dismissive of Troughton at first. So it's maybe a tribute to how good Troughton is that he was able to replace Hartnell in the popular affection.
It's got an interesting guest cast. As we already kind of touched on, a variable quality. I think William Herndl, which is a lot of name, amusing name, in Doctor Who, but William Herndl is perhaps the biggest culprit for his Ike Clanton accent.
Oh God, it's terrible, isn't it?
But Anthony Jacobs is really fun as Doc Holliday, and he's obviously the father of Matthew Jacobs, who wrote the TV movie.
And was on set, wasn't he, at one point?
Was he?
I think that's a fact.
Oh, sorry, Matthew Jacobs was on set.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, not the other way around. And his favourite, like, parent-child thing, what with Jane Tucker having originally sung... I'm going to sing the song under Rex Tucker's direction. David Graham, who plays Charlie the Barman, is Professor Kerensky in City of Death. And Johnny Ringo is Lawrence Payne, who's in the Leisure Hive and the Two Doctors as Distari.
Yeah.
His American accent's another one of the...
Dastardly Distari.
Rather dodgy ones. I seem to remember the novelisation...
He's got a bit of a Dirk Bogarde look, hasn't he?
Yeah. I read that originally that was intended to be Patrick Troughton, and he couldn't do it. And that's, you can kind of see... It is fortunate, very fortunate. You can kind of see it's got that that slightly swarthy look that Patrick Troughton sometimes has in a little bit like Salamander. He occasionally has that look in things. The novelisation, is I remember reading years ago, and really enjoying, but it was very different. And it has this framing narrative of the story being told in like an old people's home.
Yeah, it's told by Doc Holliday, isn't it?
I think, yeah, and I seem to remember there's something really literary about Johnny Ringo. Like, he loves reading books, and he keeps quoting from... I know what it is. He has a line when he's shot in the book. And it's like his gall has been split in four places or something. I need to look it up. But it's some kind of Roman reference.
Oh, okay.
And it's just this whole completely different characterisation of Johnny Ringo.
Donald Cotton loved his kind of first-person novelisations because The Mythmakers is told by Homer, isn't it? It's written as though it's a Homer bumping into the Doctor and getting involved in the adventure.
Which is
is interesting. And then I think he wrote the novelisation of the Romans, which is all told through letters and inscriptions and things like that.
It's interesting because that probably seemed really weird in the novelisations, but actually when you get to the new adventures, the idea of having... If some of those new adventures had, like, excerpts at the beginning of chapters from history books and things, it almost became a style of those books.
The other thing that I think about the Gunfighters is if we did have the opportunity to see The Mythmakers, I think it'd be structurally quite similar because I think it's another story that for a good chunk of its length is just a very witty comedy and then suddenly takes a really dark turn at the end of this big massacre. So I do think it's a kind of... I think where Donald Cotton falls down a little bit is he doesn't know how to sustain the comedy through... The grim bits of history, and you can understand why. It's very difficult to make a large...
You can't change the ending.
No, it's difficult to make that funny in any way.
And yet you wouldn't have a drama if there wasn't some kind of big climax like that. I mean, that shootout at the end of the Gunfighters is pretty dull. It's just people going back and forth shooting. It's a bit like the end of Planet of the Dead, actually, where you knew that quote climax with UNIT just shooting lots and lots of guns, and it's the same kind of thing. It's just a lot of back and forth.
And it's a shame because all the witty repartee and the back and forth dialogue is... There's none of that in the final moments, although it's just lots of people writhing in the ground.
No. Once you get to the coda and the TARDIS crew heading off again, you get a bit... The lighting's up. But just a lot of people dying.
It's almost like one of those things where you wish they'd... You wish the TARDIS had got away before the gunfight, in a way, so actually you avoid having to show something that doesn't really work very well on screen, but also undermines the comedy quite a lot.
It reminds me of two things. One is, you say back to the TARDIS, this is another one of the bizarre lines, is the Doctor saying, we'll be back in the TARDIS by tomorrow lunch. Why? It's a very strange point to time it. And also, he's only gone to the dentist. There's no real explanation of why he suddenly decided they're going to stay the night. Of course, they end up having to because they get pulled in and Dado gets taken off by Doc Holliday and the Doctor ends up in prison. But at the point we're going to the dentist, there's surely no plan to... Why would you stay in the hotel? Your TARDIS is just around the corner. And the other thing is, it reminded me of that Dodo says something like, oh, I always wanted to meet Doc Holliday. Or Wyatt Earp, or maybe Wyatt Earp. And
Mr. Worp.
And it's one of those things where characters who you'd never have associated... I always wanted to go to the Wild West. Really? Did you? I mean, Stephen, you kind of haven't known that long, and you could kind of believe him reading old Western stories because of his kind of astronaut background. But it's one of those kind of odd tropes in fiction, particularly Doctor Who as well, I think, where a character suddenly... When the Doctor takes them to an era, suddenly they remember that they've always wanted to go there, or the person they've always wanted to meet, as if it's been a big...
Yeah.
A big thing. But they never mention it before the episode in which...
No.
They suddenly remember that they...
It's not like Dodo was on board the Ark going, well, you know, I like all the elephants, but if only we'd met
only Wyatt Earp was here.
It's a very strange person to get fixated on.
That's what I mean. It's not like you go, oh, yeah, I always wanted to meet Queen Victoria.
Or Julius Caesar or Shakespeare.
I always wanted to meet Ike Clanton. Just to see what his accent was like. And I've been pleasantly surprised.
I always wanted to visit Catherine de' Medici in 15th century France.
Charles IX always held a strange fascination for me.
You know, I always wondered what the relationship between Richard I and Joanna was.
And now I know. I always wanted to meet Count Scarlione. Oh no, that's not. So I mean, that's pretty much it, isn't it? We probably should talk about the song. Do we think the song was a success?
Yeah, it's one of those things where actually I think the Hartnell era. Again, I'm a big fan of the Hartnell era. I think it does a lot of things which are braver and more experimental than probably the next 23 years of Doctor Who. And I think it's interesting to have a story where they actually have this kind of running narrative in the shape of the song and kind of commenting on the action. Mm. I think it's playing with the way that to tell the story. Actually, I suppose in the way that Donald Cotton later does with the novelisations, it's a very innovative and different way of telling the story. I don't think it quite works because you're right, the song does become a bit repetitive and it's probably too overused. If it was just once an episode at the start or something like that, or maybe they'd done something clever like the recap was sung.
Yeah.
But I think you have to give it points for trying something different. And I do think the Hartnell era, for all that it's quite creaky and old-fashioned from a 21st century perspective, it's constantly trying to do different things and it's constantly quite adventurous. There's no Hartnell season where you get six stories in a row that are all about monsters besieging a base. No. And, you know, it's very diverse and very experimental.
I quite like the song, I have to admit. I think one of the reasons it wears you down is when you now watch on DVD and you basically get that song narrating it for four episodes in a row. If you're watching those a week apart, I actually, you know, the song pops up maybe four or five times an episode, but then you've got a week off from it before it comes and chases you again. I think it works well in the first two episodes and it helps the scene transitions quite nicely. The problem is it gets towards the end and it, you know, it works once in the minor key when Charlie dies. But then it decides to be in the minor key for the next character who dies, and they have to have it as well. And then they have to repeat the Charlie song a couple of times, and you're no longer moving the story on. You're just repeating what you've already told us. It can't quite sustain it. But it's a shame because it is a really nice, different method of storytelling, and it fits with that Wild West style. The other thing I think they shouldn't have done probably is have that as the song that Stephen and Dodo are doing in the bar It's very funny that they're doing the song that is the narrative song, but you go, quick, read ahead, you'll find out that Charlie dies. But it means that you get even more repetition of it.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But I think what your first point, I think, is symptomatic of a story that I think is very, very good fun for a lot of its length, but it does feel like it runs out of steam probably about two-thirds of the way through. And the last episode and a half for a little bit plodding.
Yeah.
The last thing that I wanted to say about the gunfighters was in Peter Haining's famous 1983 book, A Celebration, the gunfighters was called out as the nadir of Doctor Who and possibly the worst thing ever to besmirch the name of Doctor Who. What do you think to that, Will?
Was this in 1983?
Yeah.
So to be fair, Time Lash hadn't been made yet.
Yeah, that's true. The worst thing in the first 20 years of Doctor Who.
I think that is, well, it doesn't commit the cardinal sin of bad Doctor Who and bad television. It is not a boring story. It is an entertaining story. I've never been in Doctor Who for the monsters. I've never been a massive monster fan. So I can quite happily sit through a historical or something like The Enemy of the World and not worry in the slightest that there isn't a monster. Mm-hmm. I guess if your thing about Doctor Who is the sci-fi stories and the monsters, then historical is always going to be a bit disappointing. But I think it's a really entertaining piece of television. It's really nicely done. The Edge of Destruction is probably worse than, I mean, just off the top of my head.
Celestial Toymaker is worse.
Celestial Toymaker is worse.
And evil as well, and racist. So I think that's.
I'm a sucker for the comedies, but I probably enjoyed that more than The Chase.
I don't know. I think Doctor Who really takes a turn into comedy when Dennis Spooner comes on board as the story editor in about 1965. And I think season two has a lot of stories like the last part we watched, The Space Museum, but I also think The Chase, The Time Meddler, Rescue, which are and The Romans, which are comedies.
I can't point to a lot of Hartnell stories even the ones I've mentioned, I wouldn't want to point to and go, that's a bad plot twist. Actually, one of the successes of the Hartnell era is that there aren't obvious terrible stories. I mean, any movie don't like to say to a Time Maker, but there aren't obvious terrible stories. I mean, I'd say that was better than probably, I don't know, The Dominators has got a pretty bad... Mm. Space Pirates has got a pretty bad rep.
Mm.
You know, we watched The Time Monster, I'd say that was better than The Time Monster.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's better than The Monster of Peladon, Planet of Evil, probably. If that was actually the nadir of Doctor Who, then Doctor Who's doing pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. If that was the nadir of Doctor Who, then, well, it's not, basically, is it? It's actually quite a good story.
You know, if you've got a good show, your nadir can be a good story.
The Hartnell era is similar to something like the Barry Letts era or the Russell T Davies era, where there is a certain benchmark of quality that Verity Lambert or Barry Letts or Russell T Davies never let the show slip beneath.
I fear her!
with one or two notable exceptions, but the Time Monster obviously is the Pertwee exception. Mm. But I think for a good chunk of its length, Doctor Who had a certain benchmark of quality of the good producers.
I don't like Fear Her, but actually... You can't point to it and go, that's a terrible...
No, it's not the worst thing.
It's trying to do things.
It's a videotape, is it?
No.
And then I think there's other bits of Doctor Who where other producers are in charge, where actually there's a far less tight grip over the show, over all aspects of the show, the design, the script, the casting, the monster, you know, all sorts. Then you get producers like Graham Williams, bless him, obviously a lovely man, but... struggled to get the show made. He struggled to get the right number of episodes made each year. Struggled to keep a grip of what was really going on the show and couldn't really deliver the number of episodes he was supposed to deliver. So I suppose, you know, there are some producers who can, some who can't, and I think Verity Lambert was definitely a producer who could. I think the Hartnell era slightly suffers when she leaves, but you still get gems like The Gunfighters, even as you get really not good things like The Celestial Toy Maker.
Or you were saying The Ark, wasn't picked yet.
I think The Ark has problems that have become more apparent over time.
Yeah. Like my one remaining point to make about The Gunfighters is the very, very, very end, because The Savages is a missing story, and so we get a tiny little bit of The Savages, and... For the story
we'll never see again.
And for all the fuss about Doctor Who and the Silurians and the mistaken name, at the end of The Gunfighters it says, next episode, Doctor Who and the Savages. Well, the randomizer is primed to send us off to find our next season to taste. So without further ado, I shall press the button. Well, the randomizer has selected, and it really does like sending us back and forth all over the place.
Right.
So before we went off to the Hartnell era, we were at the Tennant specials, and we're going back to the David Tennant era.
Okay.
And it is series three, including The Runaway Bride. So from The Runaway Bride through the Martha season, basically.
Oh, okay.
Some might say... the best season of New Doctor Who. I wouldn't want to put that out there, but it is.
Yep, it is clearly, but yes, let's pretend that we haven't decided that that's the case.
So, we have to choose from Doctor Who and the Runaway Bride, Smith and Jones, I was going to say Shakespeare in Love then,
the Shakespeare Code, Gridlock,
Daleks two-parter,
Evolution of the Daleks.
Is that what you're calling the two-parter?
That's what it's called, yeah.
That's Daleks in Manhattan.
It's called Evolution of the Dalek, the Lazarus Experiment.
Lazarus Experiment, then 42. Then Human Nature.
Correct.
Then Blink, then...
The Sound of Drums three-parter.
Okay, it's not. It's three separate stories. Utopia, The Sound of Drums, and Last of the Time Lords.
It's a three-part story.
It's not a three-part story. It's three separate episodes. And that's particularly relevant because... we'll watch two-part stories in this when we do it, but I don't think it is a three-part story. I think it is...
Ooh, that's interesting, because I think Utopia, you can watch as a standalone, but it's clearly a lead into the last two parts, and I don't think that Last of the Time Lords makes sense without seeing Utopia and understanding what the Toclophane have actually come from.
No, but then there are plenty of stories which require having seen a previous story. You know, Army of Ghosts and Doomsday... the Cybermen follow very much Pete's plot follows
so possibly, but I see it more as something like the Seeds of Doom, where, yes, the first two episodes are set in the Antarctic rather than at Harrison Chase's house, but the story in itself wouldn't really make as much sense if you refused to watch the first two episodes.
Also, very early on, we did do season 23, and I think we did episodes 13 and 14 of Trial of a Time Lord, didn't we?
Yeah, but that's mainly because who would want to watch the Trial of a Time
Lord? Well, anyway, that's, you know, I often talk about which stories I've watched recently. Basically watched all of season 3, series 3 recently, because that's what we got up to with Time Team for Deed of Rome.
What?
Time Team for have I not told you I do that?
Have you been watching Doctor Who with other people behind my back?
I have. Well, it wasn't. You weren't there.
Evidently. Who are these people? This Time Team that you talk about?
I don't know. Have you heard of Tony Robinson and Mick Aston?
I see. And this Time Gang, what do you get up to?
We watch episodes of Doctor Who and then we talk about them.
I see.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like this, but it's not, because it's in a magazine with a large readership as opposed to a podcast with six people and a dog.
Well, excuse me, I shall go and listen to one of my Big Finish audios. I bid you farewell.
When you say one of your Big Finish audios, you just mean one you own, don't you? You don't mean one you wrote.
I mean one of the ones that I review for Dogs Be Mad.
Oh, I see. Well, listener, actually, it's good that Matt should mention that, because my Big Finish CD, The Enemy Within from the Dark Shadows range, is out, and you can go and buy it from
it
the Big Finish,
to do with Doctor Who?
BigFinish.com website. It is like Doctor Who quality drama.
Do you think it will be the kind of thing that anyone listening to this podcast would even be vaguely interested in?
I think they would, and I think that they simply have loyalty to the podcast, which you don't pay for and subject yourself to. You should go and buy The Enemy Within, Dark Shadows on BigFinish.com. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Right, we're not going to do The Runaway Bride.
No.
Because we're going to do a Martha story. On the same basis, we probably shouldn't do Blink.
No.
And
although I do love Blink.
I do love Blink as well. And I think maybe not one of the multi-part stories.
Well, I don't really like Evolution of the Daleks. It has nice bits, but it suffers because it just feels like a mishmash of bits of other Dalek stories that were better.
There's a term used for some JNT stories as kind of dot to dot or shopping list stories where he's kind of gone, I want all these things, make it into a story. And Daleks in Manhattan is the only one really from that era that feels like it's a bit of a, right, I want Manhattan and some Daleks and some evolution and a theatre and poor people and the Empire State Building.
I mean, I think it's well written. And I don't think
it has lovely moments in it.
It's disastrous by any means. I just don't think it adds a huge amount to either Doctor Who or the Daleks.
No. It has one of the best Dalek moments in any story, which is
when Dalek Sek eats the man.
No, where the Daleks in the sewers are conspiring, and one of them just spins his head round and looks, and then looks back again. That's just a glorious moment, but we'll not do that. You want to argue the last three of a three-parter, we're not going to sit and watch a three.
No.
We're not going to watch a quarter of the season. And actually, while in some of the tenant seasons I would be prepared to sit through a multi-part story, is as much that I've literally just watched this season, and so I'd rather, if I'm going to re-watch something, I'd rather only watch one episode that I've just seen.
Well, I have a bid for one that I would like to watch. A sequel to a story that will never be seen again.
Oh, God, you're referring to 42, because 41 is one of those lost stories, isn't it? From
No, I was clearly referring to The Shakespeare Code, which is a sequel to The Chase.
The Chase, yes. Yeah, or
although we've just done a 10th Doctor and Gareth episode, so maybe we shouldn't. 10th Doctor and Gareth. Gareth Roberts and the 10th Doctor travel through time.
Having great adventures.
Having adventures.
Anyway. I've just got a picture of, like, Gareth in one of his wigs from the DVD extras.
Enough. I was actually talking, as you well
know,
talking about
Gridlock, Doctor Who and the Gridlock,
which is one of my very favourite Doctor Who stories in a season that has lots of my very favourite Doctor Who stories.
Smith and Jones is fun. 42 is, I think, a little underrated.
The Lazarus Experiment's the best thing Mark Gatiss has done for the new series.
He's very good in it, and it's got lovely stuff with Tish and
I love Gatiss's old man acting, where he does his funny mouth. I think he's brilliant in that. Mm.
Utopia. I just that reveal moment in Utopia is just one of the most exciting moments in Doctor Who. I think let's not prolong the discussion because, as I think you well know, Gridlock is my favourite Russell T Davies Doctor Who story.
Yeah.
And so I am going to have no complaint at all at watching Gridlock. And I don't want to spoil the next episode for you listeners, but I think it's going to get a good review from us when we come to talk about it. We'll try and find some interesting things to say about
Spoilers!
Try and find some interesting things to say about it beyond, well, that was really good, wasn't it? And we won't do it in song either.
No.
So, I think we're pretty much done. Next episode of Season to Taste, we will be talking about Gridlock before we get the randomizer to send us off elsewhere, maybe to poor old Fifth Doctor, who is still yet to feature.
Saving the best till last.
It's one way of looking at it. Cool. That's how for now.
Bye-bye! Never figured you for a back shooter, Ringo.